Well, we welcome you in to a Friday edition of My Car Guru as we get ready to head into the first big weekend of a brand new month.
Have you ever thought about going into like some type of a franchise business, like getting a franchise? Has that ever been something on your radar?
No, we've thought about opening up a shop, obviously, antique shop or something like that, but not a franchise.
Mm-hmm. You know, franchising is really big in this country, and it has been for a long time. It is a way of getting involved into an industry or a business that already has a formula set up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's a proven, you know, somebody opens some type of a restaurant, and they become wildly popular in a particular area. Then somebody says, well, maybe we could duplicate this someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
And so they open one in a place 3 miles down the road or 20 miles down the road.
Mm-hmm.
And so they say, well, this one's working good too. Let's do this again. So they get three or four. And then all of a sudden they decide to franchise it. And so that's where you take your business processes and your brand, and you formalize it in a way, and then you sell that concept to people who want to run it. And in exchange for that, you know, they pay you an upfront fee, maybe a franchise fee. And then some franchises, a lot of them, charge a royalty. So they charge you a percentage of sales, for example, in order to run the business and continue to use their name, ABC Hot Dog Shop, okay, or whatever the franchise is called.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can look around and you can see McDonald's, you know, it's a franchise.
Mm-hmm.
You typically not see a person own one McDonald's franchise. They'll own multiple. Sometimes you'll see factory stores. McDonald's Corporation owns this location.
Mm-hmm.
Independent guy owns this location. I know a guy that owns a bunch of different brand franchises all in the restaurant business. You know, you can have, you know, television places that the big box stores, I don't think like, what's it called? Best Buy. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a franchise. You know, this is a company that has decided instead of franchising, we're going to own company stores. You know, we're going to put these things like Guitar Center, for example,
mm-hmm.
or At Home. I guess At Home is probably a big company that owns their own retail establishments. And it works sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
It's been proven through this trial that we've been through, the pandemic, that a lot of retail is fading away because Amazon and other companies like that make it so much easier.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you see so many more trucks on the road than you used to 30 years ago,
mm-hmm.
is because of the way people buy stuff. You know, a car dealership is a franchise. If you are a new car dealer, now there are some exceptions. You know, if you're a Chevrolet dealer, then that Chevrolet dealer has Tim Copenhagen, for example, Andy Dietrich at Champion Chevrolet. There was an existing business at one time when I came here. It was Sherwood Chevrolet.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, I think it was Faircloth mm-hmm. Chevrolet.
Mm-hmm.
After Sherwood, it became, I think Grindstaff bought it. I think he changed the name to Greystoke or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then he sold it to Champion, to those guys. Now, Champion Chevrolet, they didn't pay anything for the franchise. Okay, the franchise is, in a car business is not something you can buy. It's something that's granted to you.
Mm-hmm.
My Ford franchise was free. When I was a Mazda dealer, when I had part of a Toyota dealership in Bristol, when I was you know, a partner in a different Chevrolet store. All of those different things were gifts, basically, granted to us.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not free. Because you have to capitalize the business, you have to put up a building, you have to buy their products, you know, you have to sign up with all of the floor planning sources. So tremendous, it's not free to set it up, it's just the franchise itself is granted. Not all franchises are that way. So let's say that somebody came in and said, Lenny, I want to buy your dealership. And I said, okay, I'll sell it to you for this such and such a price. What am I selling? Well, I can sell one of two things. I can sell the corporation, Let's say it's called Gateway Ford. It's not. That's not the name of the corporation. Let's say it is called Gateway Ford.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I want to buy Gateway Ford Incorporated. Then I can sell him the stock of the company. If I sell him the stock, he owns the company.
Mm-hmm.
Does he automatically get the Ford franchise with it? No.
Mm-mm.
Ford has to say, we approve of this guy,
mm-hmm.
before he gets that franchise. Another way that I can sell the dealership is to sell. I'm not selling the dealership. Let me make this very clear. I'm just using this as an example. So I can sell the corporation, sell a stock. Most dealership sales do not include a stock sale, okay, because most buyers don't want to buy an existing corporation. They want to start their own corporation. They don't want to buy any liabilities that your corporation may have. Let's say that somebody all of a sudden they had a bad situation 5 years ago and they want to sue the corporation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if I sell him the corporation, they can still sue him because
mm-hmm.
he owns the corporation.
Right.
All right. Most dealership deals don't include that. Most of them are what we call asset sales.
Mm-hmm.
So he's selling the assets. I would be selling the assets of the corporation. May include the building, may not.
Mm-hmm.
He may become a tenant of mine mm-hmm. if I don't sell him the building. But it would be like the parts, the inventory, the used cars.
Mm-hmm.
Usually don't buy the new cars. The new cars are held by a floor plan source. You can assume responsibility for that floor plan,
mm-hmm.
For all the debt on those cars. You can buy the furniture, the fixtures. You don't buy the employees. You know, the employees have to make a decision, you know, when a dealership sells. Do I want to work for this new guy or not?
Yeah.
And so typically what happens when a dealership is sold, the new guy or gal comes in, interviews everybody, and says, I'm going to keep you, you're gone, you're staying, you're gone. And then people can make their own decision
yeah.
whether they stick around or not. Typically, they will bring in new management. So, you know, that's kind of how the franchise system works, you know, in the car business. Is
mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter whether you're a Kia dealer or a Hyundai dealer or a Toyota dealer. They all work about the same way.
Mm-hmm.
They all have different standards. The manufacturer says, okay, what is your history? You know, Tim, if you had $100 million, okay, and you said, I'm gonna buy a car dealership today, and I guarantee if you walked into most dealerships, they would say, well, if you give me enough money, I'll sell it to you,
mm-hmm.
and you could buy it. But the manufacturer is going to look at you and say, no, wait a minute. Tim has always been in radio and TV.
Yeah.
Right? He has never owned a car dealership.
Right.
And does not know really anything about the car business.
Mm-hmm.
They would not approve you.
Right.
And that's not discriminatory.
I wouldn't expect them to.
You know, because yeah. you're a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, they're not discriminating against you for any reason. If you were black or whatever, mm-hmm. they know better than that, okay? It is based on qualifications
mm-hmm.
and what is your experience. And so that's a kind of an interesting thing. None of the car dealerships that you see, the distribution, is owned by the factory. With a few exceptions. CarMax, of course, they're a used car dealer, right?
Mm-hmm.
They only sell used cars. They did have some new car dealerships, but they've sold them. They've realized they can't make money selling new cars, but they can make a lot of money selling used cars, and they do. CarMax is a factory-owned, basically not a factory-owned, but a corporate-owned entity.
Mm-hmm.
Ford Motor Company shocked the industry in 1997. Saying that they were going to invest with dealers to consolidate markets. And they went into Oklahoma City. And they developed something called the Auto Collection. And it was all the Ford dealers in this particular market. They bought them all.
Hmm.
And they say, okay, we're going to see if we can do this without dealers. Oh, you're talking. Now, I was a Chevrolet dealer at the time. But this was a shock to the system.
Mm-hmm.
Because all of a sudden, a manufacturer of automobiles was going to get into the retail car business. And we'll talk about what happened here in just a minute.
We're back with a Friday morning edition of My Car Guru talking about a shocking event that happened in 1997.
Yeah, Ford thought that, maybe we don't need dealers. Let's experiment with something here. Let's go into a market, a fairly large automotive market, and buy up all of the stores. Let's offer these dealers enough money where they can get out. And so we will be vertically integrated now. We will not only manufacture the products, but we will retail the products in the stores. Well, they had tremendous pushback from dealers.
Sure.
Because this was a bad sign.
Mm-hmm.
They did. They started in Oklahoma City, and then they went. Their largest consolidation was in Salt Lake City, Utah. Mm-hmm. It began in November of 98. They had 14 franchises at 12 different locations, independently employed about 1,000 people, generating about $600 million in annual sales. They had six of eight stores in the Rochester, New York auto collection. And just to get to the end of the story, it was a miserable failure.
Mm-hmm.
It was a miserable failure because it is a sad, lazy myth to think of car dealers as a middleman. You know, a lot of people have, you always hear, well, you know, you cut out the middleman, you can buy stuff for less. But the truth of the matter is, factories are not real good. Manufacturers are not real good at retail when it comes to cars.
Mm-hmm.
Because an auto dealership is a very complicated business. It is not like Best Buy. It is not like Old Navy. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
We are not just retailing new products.
Mm-hmm.
We fix products too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
We provide service, you know, in terms of we maintain products, in terms of regular maintenance. We do warranty work, you know, for the manufacturer. There are so many other side benefits, but when you look at financing, we arrange financing for customers. We rent cars. We loan cars. And we take trade-ins. What other business do you know of that takes trade-ins in order to make the transaction happen?
Mm-hmm.
If we didn't take trade-ins and create this huge used vehicle market, the new vehicle market wouldn't exist. They wouldn't be able to survive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, evaluating trade-ins, risking capital to be able to carry an inventory of trade-ins, risking capital to carry and manage new vehicle inventory, knowing your community. You know, you get some guy from New York that comes down to East Tennessee to run a car dealership, he's a fish out of water. He doesn't know these people. He doesn't know the market. You know, most new car dealers are, for the majority of the last 60, 70 years, have been members of that community that ended up getting a franchise and opening the business based on qualifications. Most of those new car dealers were used car dealers before. That's where they learned the business.
Mm-hmm.
And then they started accumulating multiple dealerships. Now, the trend that we're seeing now is consolidation. I get calls every week, people wanting to buy my dealership. Every week. I get emails all the time from automotive brokers who are wanting to buy a dealership. And they already own 15 or 20 or 100.
Mm-hmm.
And they're wanting to come in and buy my store. Now, would I sell? Of course. You know, if somebody offered enough money, yeah. But, I mean, that's just me being a bit. Do I want to? No. Is that my plan? Absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
I have the right to make that call, though, because I'm an independent businessman and I don't work for anybody but me and my customers. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm accountable to my customers and to my employees, and I feel that I'm accountable to my community as well. There's three dealerships in Greenville now at one time. You know, Greenville is a great car market, and it's been that way for a long time. A lot of people come from the Tri-Cities to buy cars in Greenville, and they have forever. Mm-hmm. You know, we get a lot of business out of Newport and Morristown, and before there was the Internet, I would say that probably 25% of the business in Greenville came from out of town. People thinking, well, you know, they charge too much in Kingsport. They think everybody works at Eastman. I can't tell you how many times I have heard that as a reason somebody. Well, they think everybody has money in Johnson City, you know, so they come to Greenville to buy cars. And that's why Greenville has been such a successful new car market. You know, the dealers down there have always stocked pretty big inventories, and it is a small community, just 16,000 population. But, you know, for that matter, Elizabethton has been a good car town,
mm-hmm.
you know, with Grindstaff and all that, been a lot of dealers. And,
mm-hmm.
and you know, some of the smaller communities like Irwin and Rogersville and places like that, they've never really been able to do it. But, you know, we do big numbers in Greene County, and it's because all those people come down. But now it has even gotten more. Like over 50% of our business now comes from outside of our county at my dealership.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and a lot of people in my community may migrate north. You have all these perceptions of people, but from a business standpoint, dealers are a vital part of their community. You think about the sales tax revenue that's generated.
Mm-hmm.
Tennessee depends on sales tax revenue, right?
Yeah. Yep.
And if you don't have a car dealer in your town, then you're missing out on a huge amount of revenue, because car dealers next to Walmart and maybe another big box, maybe grocery stores, there's no bigger sales tax collector than a car dealership.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that is an important source of revenue for the local community. They have the, what they call the local option tax, you know, which is local. And then there's also a sharing of the state sales tax that comes back to the community. Now, most communities make their money on property taxes, right, and other types of fees and things like that that they charge. But sales tax is a big part of it. And so, you know, we also, car dealers are very involved in the community. I've heard a lot of the dealers in the Tri-Cities, Mitch Walters with the Friendship Group, very active. You know, the Honda dealer here in town, Johnson City Honda, is very active, you know, in the community and contributes a lot. The Wallace Group does. You know, that's just valuable. You know, who sponsors more baseball teams and football teams and horse shows and beauty pageants? And everybody goes knocking. They go to the banks, they go to real estate agents, and they come to the car dealers, you know, mm-hmm. for that. And I think it's so vital that we, my dad used to call it paying your civic rent. And I think that kind of makes donations and contributions and participating in civic activities more of an obligation, you know, and when you look at it, that's a part of your overhead, and you need to just take that into account.
Yeah.
But this franchising system, they've proven that it's vital to the health of the car business to let independent car dealers run the car dealerships and let the factories build the products, because you know, when factory decides to sell its products directly to customers, they incur the same costs that we have, you know, when it comes to running a car dealership, the exact way an independent distributor would incur cost.
Mm-hmm.
And so profit margins are very thin in the car business, and that's because of the competition that we have competing against other dealers. I compete with Johnson City Ford. I compete with whatever, Fairway Ford, you know, Friendship Ford. Even though Mitch Walters is a friend, I compete with him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even though the Hudson Group, I know a lot of the guys up there, they're friends. But we compete against each other. We fight for our customers.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's good, because it keeps prices down. It helps people be able to buy cars for less money.
Yep. All right, we will take our last break. We'll be back and wrap things up right after this. And we're back here Friday morning, wrapping up this edition of My Car Guru for today.
Yeah, this article from April 8th, 2002 in Automotive News. Ford, this week, will close the book on its failed auto collection retailing strategy, selling its last company-owned store to an independent dealer. The sale of Murray Ford in Salt Lake to dealer Tom LaPointe will complete Ford's 10-month divestiture of company-owned dealerships in five U.S. markets. The sale represents the final move in Ford's aborted plan to invest with dealers and consolidate retail markets nationwide.
So it took about 5 years before
yeah.
it dissolved.
Yeah. And, you know, the combination was that you know, Ford thought that they could educate all these people and put them in general management positions in car dealerships, and being able to deal with the turnover and stuff that car dealers face, and recruit salespeople and manage service departments and handle, you know, everything. Ford figured out that they need to stick to building cars,
mm-hmm.
you know, and making parts and building the best products that they could. This ticked off a lot of people. This was during a very aggressive CEO that was with the Ford Motor Company that had made a lot of other bonehead moves, like buying Jaguar and Volvo and Mazda and a bunch of other, trying to create a luxury division within Ford where they were selling luxury cars. I remember when Alan Mulally, who became the savior of the Ford Motor Company, kept him from going into bankruptcy. When his first day at Ford, he was driving a Toyota, I think it was a Camry, and he drove into the parking garage. He was directed under Ford World Headquarters. And he drove in, and he started looking for a parking place. And he was looking around, and it just hit him. He didn't see a single Ford or Mercury. All he saw were Land Rovers, Volvos, and other vehicles that Ford, that all these people wanted to drive. They didn't want to drive Fords anymore. And he said, we're going to stop that.
Yeah.
And he ended up divesting the Ford Motor Company of all these other brands. He said, we're going to focus on Ford and Lincoln. I mean, they got rid of Mercury as well.
Yeah.
He says, we're going to be the best Ford and the best Lincoln that we can be. And that's what we're going to do.
Yeah.
And that type of focus is what saved the company. And he came from Boeing. He was a good move by Bill Ford. I mean, literally saved the Ford Motor Company. The Ford Motor Company would still be here, but they would have taken bankruptcy.
Yeah.
Just like GM did, had it not been for Alan Mulally.
Yeah. All right, good stuff. That'll do it for My Car Guru for this Friday and for this week. Hope everybody has a great weekend, and we'll talk to you again on Monday morning.